ESPN 97.5.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Presented by Zadot Jewelers.
Don't sweat the technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, the news of Stephon Gilmore being a Houston Texan are done. He signed with the Minnesota Vikings. They gave him the contract he wanted. I know this was a name that we've been watching for to see if he was eventually going to sign, and he does with the Vikings. So the dream of him joining the Houston Texans is dead for now.
I think the well has gone dry in terms of the guys that we had on our request list for interested to see if the Texans would take a flyer on a veteran that could possibly help them. Simmons was my guy. You know, you brought up Gilmore right from the start.
Simmons is still available.
The safety?
Oh, I'm thinking Howard. I'm thinking Howard.
Atlanta. But yeah, I mean, look, Gilmore would have been nice, but you know, you just got to believe what they see is that Laster's going to be the guy. After watching the game this weekend, the one thing that I was going to notate is something that you brought up in terms of the depth at linebacker. But I think that that's the position group that they look at now to say that they've got money to spend and they're going to be watching a lot with cuts and cap casualties, that I think they need another linebacker or two that can be create better depth for them in case something happens, or in the case of Harris fighting the calf.
Yeah, two will be tough. I mean, Harris could start on PUP, though. Like, it doesn't seem like he's right around the bend. Comes back and leaves. I didn't realize it was like in the stretching drills that DJ mentioned when he was with us on Friday. So it doesn't seem like Harris's return is imminent. And they probably want to work him back to being, you know, 100% before the season gets underway. So I think it's a very real chance Harris doesn't play in week one. I think there's a very real chance that Harris is pupped to start the year. So now you're looking at starters like Al Shire and Henry To'o. So that's worrisome. That's troubling. I have Hanson and Hewitt making the team behind them. Like, yeah, I don't like that position. That's been one of the weaker ones I've seen all training camp, especially when you add in the injury of Harris. So
yeah, the injury scares
I think we're going to see a name there that we don't currently have on this roster.
And the fact that they keep talking about To'o and he's got all these instincts and everything like that and a great football IQ, that's fantastic. But just athletically and what you need a guy to do, I just don't know with an injury if you want to rely on him to be able to fill in for a guy like Christian Harris.
No, I'm with you. I think he's a fine backup. He's not somebody I want playing a whole lot. I think really don't want him in the base 4-3. Like, I think he's a backup when you're running 4-3. Now, I think he's probably a starter, even if Harris is here in a 4-3, which you can get by with that because he would just be off the field on nickel. But, yeah, it is a troubling position. You're right. The Falcons are pulling off something very interesting. Michael Penix did not play in their preseason game, and then Raheem Morris was asked afterwards, why not, and why are you not playing him?
Last week, we wanted to get him out there and get a feel for what he was in live game, which we kind of already knew. Wanted to see him be able to answer questions, talk about it on the sideline, go out there and execute, make mistakes, and know what to do. Like when he looked the wrong way, getting right to the check down. He did a lot of those things a lot, but it took a hit last week, should have changed the protection. He's able to clearly communicate those things. I mean, we've seen enough last week of Michael Penix and the live stuff, and now we had the chance to mitigate him in practice. And you know, we give him a bunch of live stuff out there in practice that you do everything that you would do in a game other than get hit. But, you know, we feel really good where we're at with Michael. We feel really good where we're at with the other guys that we set, and we treated that the same way. But Mike showed us last week enough that we don't have to play him in the preseason.
Why are they not playing a backup quarterback who's a rookie in the preseason? What is the logic here?
I've got a conspiracy here.
All right.
I think what they're trying to protect themselves against, because Penix looked good in that first preseason game. I think they're trying to protect themselves from Michael Penix playing really well in preseason game one, then two, and three, and starting the conversation with the media and the fans, like, especially when Kirk Cousins has a primetime game and he sucks, because he always sucks on primetime. Starting the conversation, when will Michael Penix be the starter before they're ready to have the conversation?
Similar to the reason why you don't bring Joe Flacco back in Cleveland with Deshaun healthy, because you don't want to hear from the fans that you need to start Flacco over Deshaun. It's a good point.
Similar, but on a way bigger scale.
Yeah, financially, yeah.
Yeah, because he's the eighth overall pick.
Yeah, look, it's a good point. It sounded like because he was avoiding wanting him to get hit, too. Like, maybe, you know, that But at the same time, if he's your backup and you're not relying on him, throw him out there.
Yeah, I don't. That's where I'm at. Like, who cares if he gets hit? Like, he's supposed to be your backup. What's the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. He tears his ACL and he comes back next year. He's your backup. I like that theory. They're kind of protecting Kirk here. They're kind of protecting their investment here.
Because
their financial.
What we heard right after the draft was, you know, Kirk Cousins wasn't prepared for that pick. He didn't know it was going to happen right away. Apparently, the feelings were a little bit hurt, not to the point where he's going to start a problem in the locker room, but feelings were a little bit hurt. So I think this might have been a little bit of protecting feelings.
Yeah, that's right. He did come out and say,
like, he wasn't ready for
it. He wasn't happy for it. Yeah. He knows he's going to get his money, but right after trying to get excited about your new team and, you know, and everything that goes with it, that happens, and he was not happy. You're right.
This is interesting. The pushback that I would have on this, though, is I already think that's going to exist. If Kirk Cousins throws 3 interceptions in week 1, they lose. If Kirk Cousins throws 2 interceptions in week 2, they lose. They're going to call for his head regardless. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it actually – I like the theory – but I don't really think it plays out in practice.
I think you're though falling into the trap of rational coaching though. Like coaching, what we think is going to should happen, what's logical, isn't necessarily what coaches and front offices and ownership groups are going to do. You're right. They probably will get the calls on sports radio in Atlanta, regardless of where they play them. But it gives them. You know, let's say this is October. That gives them the ability to say, well, you know, Michael Penix, he's not ready yet. But if he's playing every preseason game and looks great, then it's going to be harder to make that argument.
Are we cashing or trashing this? 713-780-3776. I'm cashing
it. I'm cashing it as well.
Go ahead.
Because you know how organizations are, whether it's right or wrong, or the other guy might look like he's a better player right now, when you make that commitment to the guy, you're going to baby his ass and make sure that, you know, you butter him up, kiss his feet, and make sure while the contract is there.
I mean,
they're take care of him.
But they also drafted Pinnick, so they weren't doing that.
That was they did the opposite
of
that.
But I think they drafted him for – I still think they drafted him for post-Cousins.
But it's 4 years, though, and Michael Pinnick is an older quarterback.
He's on a 4-year deal with a 5th-year option.
I mean, that would be Michael Pinnick taking over like
a 2-year deal. Yeah,
I think it was a 2-year deal. Yeah, I'm cashing the theory. I don't think it actually matters, though.
Probably not.
I think it's kind of foolish. And, I mean, again, he's a rookie quarterback that you want to develop. Well, how do you get him to develop? You play him in football games. Yeah, it's so weird to me.
Especially since if he does what we think they might be worried about, it means he's playing really well. Mm-hmm. So that means if you did go to him, you have a good quarterback.
And it justifies you as a team and an organization making the pick.
Right.
So
it makes you look smart.
Yeah, so exactly. So it actually helps you.
You want to have another conspiracy theorist?
Hit me.
I think the Falcons have no idea what they're doing.
That's fair.
I think they're in over their head and have no idea what they're doing. Terry Fontenot, this is his first general managing job. Now, he's been on the job for a while. But even then, they kind of like round peg squared hole their roster with their head coach, Arthur Smith, at the time. They move on from Arthur Smith. It's like, well, you have all these offensive pieces. Bring in an offensive guy. They bring in Raheem Morris. They draft Michael Penix that early in the draft when you already signed Kirk Cousins. I think there's a very real chance that organization is incompetent.
Now he's throwing big money at Simmons and Judon. And now it looks like...
Well, Simmons was a 1-year deal.
Right. But also with Judon, you committed a 3rd-round pick, and now they didn't have they don't have a deal in place, and it looks like they're not going to get one done.
And the big knock on that, too, is like I've seen people be critical of the Falcons because on draft day, they all knew that they needed an edge rusher, and instead you draft a quarterback at number 8 whenever you sign Kirk Cousins with the money, and there was a lot of defensive ends that were there that, like... The Latu guy who ended up going
to the Colts.
Turner. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there wasn't even a defensive end off the
board. They could have drafted the highest defensive end on their board.
That's right.
So a lot of people were critical after the Judon trade. So I think there's a very real chance that front office is bad.
But now then on top of that, you trade for a guy you don't get an extension for, and you give up a 3rd-round pick. And we know that, you know, from Bill O'Brien to Laramie Tunsil. To the fact that normally if you're going to make a trade like that to make sure that you don't look like you have egg on your face and the guy walks after a year, you lock him down.
Yeah, I think it's a bad front office. I think we got a bad front office there in Atlanta. Now, they might have enough talent to overcome a dreadful division, but we'll see long term if there's something there. There was a 49ers beat guy that had a theory as to why the San Francisco 49ers played Brock Purdy in their preseason game, because they set out every single one of their weapons. They set out like Jawan Jennings and Jordan Mason, who are like their 3rd running back and like wide receiver 4 or 5. They were without a couple of their offensive linemen, and they still played Brock Purdy. They even had Kubiak calling plays in that game and not Shanahan. So this beat writer's theory is that he wanted to show the rest of the NFL that Brock Purdy isn't all that great whenever he doesn't have the offensive weapons beside him or he doesn't have a good offensive line in front of him. And there's some thought that maybe it could come to the whole contract extension thing.
Yeah, I could say it's the system and not you, Brock.
There's a theory out there.
I would agree that it's the system and not the quarterback, but that seems like an awful long way to go to play games on that.
Why would you play Brock Purdy in that game with offensive linemen out,
I can't
with all the skill guys out?
I know. I can't dismiss it. It's weird. Let's go with it for a second and say that's legit. I would lose a lot of my respect for the intelligence of Kyle Shanahan.
But I also think that, you know, I agree with you, Brian. I've always thought that Brock Purdy it's the system more than the quarterback. But you also have to be good at doing the game manager part of it, because Trey Lance couldn't do it enough to get on the field for what they gave up to get a guy like that, to where his argument could be, yeah, it's a great system. You still got to have a guy that's not going to make mistakes and be able to execute it, and not everybody can do it. But, yeah, it's a risky proposition.
And putting him out there, though, with offensive line and weapons missing, I mean, you're trying to win a Super Bowl this year. The 49ers are at what worst, like the third best odds to win the Super Bowl? Maybe behind the Chiefs, and I don't even know who would be.
That adds to the conspiracy. Why are you playing him?
I know, but that's the point. Like, I'm saying to Kyle Shanahan's intelligence, to make the point to Purdy for a future contract negotiation at the possible risk of injuring your quarterback when you're trying to win a Super Bowl and like the second best favorite in the NFL seems like a ridiculous move to me.
Maybe
who's the backup?
Joshua Dobbs, who looked good. Maybe he's a Joshua Dobbs fan. Kyle Shanahan.
Call Minnesota and ask how that worked out. Maybe he's on Josh Dobbs for more than a game or two.
Maybe he's a Joshua Dobbs fan. I wouldn't have played Purdy. I'm with you. I wouldn't have played Purdy, but it begs the question, why is Purdy out there?
Plus, he got beat up a little bit, too.
Yes, he got hit.
Yeah.
And
you're going to go Josh Dobbs for the whole year and run that risk just to prove that point?
Well, they're both things are in play here. Like, one, why is he playing? It's dumb for him to play. Then why is he playing? The agent's going to come to Shanahan and John Lynch whenever he's ready for that contract extension, demanding top five money. And Shanahan and Lynch are going to put on the film to his agent and go, that's top five money? Uh-uh. No, it's not. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, but we both know that showing, a preseason tape from, I guess it would be 2 years in the past at that point, that's not going to make a difference in contract negotiations.
They're going to say, you need us more than we need you.
Yeah, they can make that point, and Purdy will wave goodbye as he walks out the door and gets that money from someone else.
I don't know. I think Purdy's going to be like, you know what, you're right, I'll take top eight money, and I'll be your quarterback for the next 5 years.
Teams aren't going to win in negotiations with quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how...
Some quarterbacks...
Not with quarterbacks that would be in command on the open market.
I disagree. Mahomes is an under market deal.
He decided to
Brady
give that.
I know, but that's the point. Quarterbacks are willing to do it.
That's not the team necessarily winning the deal. That's the player giving them, a good deal.
Let's call it a team-friendly deal.
Yeah, but that was on the behest of the player, not the team getting one over on. That's what I'm saying. They're not going to win these deals unless the players agree to it.
But isn't that every single team-friendly contract, though? Is that the player is willing to give you a hometown discount?
You're talking about using preseason tape as leverage to be able to win the deal. What I'm saying, that's not good enough to win quarterback deals. You're only going to win the deal, to your example, if Mahomes or Brady decide to give it to you.
But if he gets a guarantee for, say, a couple extra years and he gets top eight money instead of top five, but he's got a plethora of weapons around him offensively as opposed to going to a crap team where he's going to get his head ripped off, I think there are guys that are going to consider that for the longevity of not only the position, but getting similar money, but playing on a chance to win every year team.
Yeah.
Because you're not like some of the guys we say when even Tua comes up or Love.
Still be the player deciding to give the deal versus the team winning it through a negotiation.
But that's every deal. That's every deal that's signed.
I know. Well, that cancels out your point, though, with the tactic of putting him in the preseason game to win leverage in a contract
negotiation. Diminishes his value. It shows that his value isn't as great as perhaps
I just don't think that's enough to win
NFL
a deal, though.
But, Brian, nothing's off the table when you go into these negotiations like that, because look at when baseball guys go to arbitration and some of these guys are just all wide-eyed going, I can't believe how they treated me in arbitration. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you've done for me. They're going to bring that crap up if it saves them money.
I'm sure they'll try. I just don't think it'll work.
I think it will. I think the teams around the NFL are going to be like, man, y'all see Brock Purdy without the skill and without the offensive line of the 49 with Kubiak calling plays.
Yeah, he looks like
a backup quarterback.
He
looks like a backup quarterback. I can't pay that guy top five money. You see how he looked in that preseason game? Uh-uh, not for me. All right, I feel good about the Astros as a World Series contender again. I'll tell you why next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Blue and Red Rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
The Astros are saying they will officially go to a six-man rotation, so there is that. To be expected, nothing new there. So I think you have to take the Astros seriously as a World Series contender. And maybe we should have always thought that. Vegas has been very respectful of this team all year long. Even when they were 12-24, Vegas was not adjusting the line in this crazy way because they knew the Astros roster was good. But this is why the Astros should be taken seriously. They have the top two in the starting rotation that are really stinking good. They have two horses at the top. Hunter Brown, 10-2, the 2.33 ERA since June 1st. The Astros are 10-0 in the last 10 games Fromber has started. In his last eight, Fromber 7-0, the 2.24 ERA. They have two starting pitchers at the top of the rotation that are amongst the best starting pitchers in baseball. And then if you stay within their rotation, they still have some of the best middle starting pitchers in all of baseball. Yusei Kikuchi's been fabulous since he's been an Astro. Even Ronel Blanco is still amongst the leaders in ERA in the American League. That's to a surprise of some. He's got a sub-3 ERA, Ronel Blanco does. Spencer Arrighetti's been much better, even though he wasn't as good against the White Sox. Justin Verlander is coming back. So you have two horses at the top. You have three other starters in the middle who are still very good. You only need four in the playoffs. And then even Arrighetti can get some outs. You look to the bullpen. You have two dudes at the back of the bullpen that can slam the door shut on games. Brian Abreu and then Josh Hader, who's been excellent in safe situations. Flip it over to the offense, and the offense has struggled some, but even though the offense has struggled, the Astros are still top five in baseball and in the American League in a bunch of different offensive stats. So like seventh in runs per game too. So the offense is good enough. And then when you break down who the offense, what they have in it, they have Jordan Alvarez, who is kind of has a knack for the big moment, turning games upside down. You have Jose Altuve, who has the second most postseason homers of all time. Alex Bregman's still solid. Hopefully Kyle Tucker comes back. Yiner Diaz is coming on as a young player. The Astros have the pieces. Not going to say that they're going to win it all. They're going to win the World Series. I cannot predict the future. But the Astros have all the pieces in play that you need to win a World Series.
And you factor in, Jeremy, because I don't disagree with you, and I think this was the team we all thought we were getting at the start of the season. For the very fact of the matter is that during this golden era run that they've been on, they're battle-tested. They're seasoned. They know when even look at what happened during the course of the season. Most teams would have folded up their tents and gone home and said, it just looks like it's not going to be our year. And injuries this, and numbers say we're not that. And at the end of the day, at a certain point, you just pull the plug and go, hey, we're going to give it a go next season. But instead, this is a team battle-tested that knew what they were capable of doing if they could get to close to 100%. The one major factor is Tucker. I mean, because even without Verlander, you touched on the fact that they have insurance, unlike the Texans in the past, they have insurance policies all over the place. If someone goes down, they have another option. So now you're going to a six-man rotation because you have five fully capable starters that have been towing the load while Justin Verlander's been out. The big thing is, with a Victor Caratini, an unsung hero in insurance policy, who was supposed to be a backup catcher, but because of the offensive limitations with injury, you were able to put Yiner at first or DH. Caratini holds his own, unlike a Maldonado, to catch and also be able to hit and be a switch hitter. And now suddenly you don't miss much. Yes, you missed Kyle Tucker's All-Star, but at least you're being able to tread water until you get him back. As long as you get Kyle Tucker back, no one wants to see that top five in the batting order, and the fact that the middle of the lineup with protection can be so good, then Peña could be good down lower in the lineup, and you start talking about guys that can pick up some of the extra slack. You've got a lineup capable with pitching, and the fact that even with a Presley, if Presley underachieves, the fact that all of a sudden out of nowhere, here comes Taylor Scott, and Taylor Scott's able to pitch the seventh inning for you.
Yeah, I like where this team is at. And like Art Howe was telling us earlier, like they still haven't played to their potential. Like I think there's still meat on the bone in terms of this team improving. And it's mostly offensively because I think you're getting about the best you can get from a pitching staff point of view. Verlander will help, you know, extend the rotation, six man. It'll be able to lighten the load on their starters. Hopefully that's something that benefits them late in the season. The team kind of reminds me of the 05 Astros, where their pitching was just very, very good. Their pitching kept them in every single game, and then they got some timely hitting. But you look back at that team, like the bottom of the order on the 05 Astros was brutal. I still think that this bottom of the order isn't great, but now you have guys that will be at the bottom once Tucker's back, Bregman's back, knock on wood, that are kind of defensive-minded players. Like Pena, I'm sure, will be hitting like 6th or 7th. Jake Meyers will probably be hitting 7th or 8th, but those are defensive-minded guys. The problem you have now is that those guys are batting in the top 4 spots in the lineup. Like right. You had Jake Meyers hitting cleanup the other day.
I cringed at that thought.
So you're still, like, the bottom of the order is still going to be weak on this team. So, but you can live with that when you have the 1-6 that you hope is strong, and then when you're getting the pitching that you've been getting lately.
Now, to try and minimize how bad the bottom of the order is, does that mean Yordan's in left field, Caratini's is catching?
I wonder. I think that'll probably be game by game, I bet.
Yeah.
Like, depending on where they're playing, who's on the mound for you. Because, like, when Fromber's pitching, they don't have a problem playing Yordan in left field because he's a ground ball pitcher. Hunter Brown's a ground ball guy, too. But then, like, if Verlander's pitching, who's a fly ball guy, that's probably when Yordan will be DH.
Because ideally, if Dubon does truly go to his utility role and Yordan's in left, Tucker's in right, Jake's in center, Caratini's catching. Now, depending on what you do with DH first base, everything else is already spoken for with Bregman, Altuve, and Pena, and that lineup is really, really salty.
If you just went pure best 9 offensive players, which I don't think you would every single game, because again, you're trying to like play with who's pitching for you, what field you're on, et cetera. Like if you're playing on turf, like they don't like Yordan on turf, or a big left field, they don't like Yordan playing a big left field a lot. But if you're just going best 9 offense, I think, well, it kind of depends on who you're facing, too.
The pitcher, yeah.
But if I mean, I think Caratini's in your best 9. I think he's catching, especially against a righty. Probably Yiner.
Yeah, so if Yiner's at first base, then what are you going to do? You get someone else at DH?
You could either go, you know, if you're going pure offense, you could go Yordan left field, Yiner Singleton first base, Yiner Singleton DH, whichever one's not playing there. They probably would play Singleton at first base and DH Yiner if they were going pure offense. But if it's like a lefty on the mound, they don't like Singleton against lefties. So, but they also like Caratini more against righties than lefties. Like today, there's a righty on the mound. Singleton's not in the lineup. Caratini's catching. Yiner's playing first. Yordan's DHing. If you were to put Yordan in left field today, that opens up DH, but you have a righty pitching. Is there a lefty bat? Maybe Singleton?
Yeah, see, I just go the lefty-righty means the most to me. And if it's a lefty, I just don't think they would go Singleton.
I don't either.
Yeah, so I think that from that standpoint, then you figure out, well, who's the next bat up? So if you go Yiner at first base because Singleton's out,
they don't love Caratini against lefties, though.
So then where do you go? So you go Yiner at catcher. And then your first baseman, if it's not Singleton, is going to be DeCenzo?
Probably because he's a righty against a lefty.
And then is Whitcomb out?
Maybe he'd be in the mix there. Like, okay. He's currently playing third because of no Bregman.
Right.
But if Whitcomb outproduces DeCenzo the rest of the way, maybe he is your first baseman against lefties come playoff time. And then depending on what you do with Yordan, like you hope you have Tucker back. Myers is your center fielder. Like they're just committed to Myers in center field, which is fine.
Let's be honest, he's been better offensively than we thought he was going to be.
He's actually been the exact same guy who he was last year. I was looking at this today. Jake Myers' numbers this year versus last year are almost identical. Now, he got off to the hot start, so I think it kind of makes us think differently. But Jake Myers last year had a .227 average. This year it's .231. Last year Myers had a .296 on base. This year it's .295. Last year Myers had a .382 slugging. This year it's .392. Same guy.
Yeah.
He's the same guy, except he's so good defensively, we're just going to put him out there no matter what.
More dingers?
His slugging is 10 points better. He had 10 homers last year in 341 plate appearances. He has 12 homers this year in 398 plate appearances.
Wow.
He's almost the same exact offensive player that he was last year.
That's crazy.
The difference is Chaz McCormick has done nothing. Yep. So Chaz McCormick last year pressed Myers out of the lineup because his bat was so good and was fine defensively. This year, there's been nobody forcing Myers out of the lineup, despite Myers being almost exactly the same offensive
player.
And
you can live with him if he's your worst option at the end of your lineup, if you have all the other guys that they are capable of putting out there just for offense alone.
Exactly. And because Chaz isn't pushing him. Like, if Chaz was pushing him, we have a different story.
That's why it's going to be so – this offseason is going to be so intriguing, because are you going to do something with Chaz? Are you going to find a better bat so that that becomes a possibility? But can they play center field? And then what are you going to do with Yiner?
Yeah. Yeah, those would be the questions.
Because Caratini's got 1 year left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Caratini's either your starting catcher or your backup catcher, depending on what you do with Yiner. So, yeah. I mean, if you're going – if you have a righty on the mound, your best nine is probably Caratini catching, Singleton at first, Altuve, Pena, Bregman, Jordan, Yiner DHs, and then Myers and Tucker. If you have a lefty on the mound, it would be –
that's where it's interesting at first base.
Probably – and I think catcher a little bit. I think that they would prefer Yiner to catch, because they don't love Caratini against lefties. Now, they've been using him more lately, but the career numbers do not back that up. This year, they've been kind of even. I think at first base, you would have DeZinzo Whitcomb, whoever's playing the best there. Or maybe you just go Caratini, catcher, and Yiner at first base, depending on who's hot, you know?
Yep.
And then maybe who's pitching, because they like Caratini catching Kikuchi. Altuve, Pena, they're not changing. Bregman will be at third, depending on what you want to do with Jordan defensively. Left field DH, Meyer center, Tucker right. You really don't have a great DH option. Maybe Dubon. Maybe you play Dubon in left, Jordan DH.
It comes down to your lesser of two evils. Is Caratini batting right-handed better than whatever DeCenzo or Whitcomb are giving you if they were to be your option at first base? Mm-hmm. Because then you just play Yiner at first, you play Caratini and take your chances with him as a right-handed bat, and then just say, at least he's better than what the young guys have been giving me.
Yeah. I think one thing we're probably not bringing up is that Espada seems to like his catchers catching certain pitchers. He kind of goes a little dusty there. Because, like, Caratini's caught every single Kikuchi start. Mm-hmm. Yiner's now catching Fromber and Hunter Brown. It'll be interesting to see who catches Verlander. So, like, he's – like, maybe we're not putting any emphasis on that, and maybe we should put all of our emphasis on that.
Because then the other thing that they're saying, too, is because you don't want to limit Caratini. Right now he's getting 2 out of every 5 guaranteed, and then they're finding a place for him. They said when Verlander comes back that evidently he prefers Yiner.
Oh, really?
So, therefore, Caratini's still only getting 2 out of the 6, but you need his bat in the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's he's got a bunch of options that really aren't great options, but he has to kind of make chicken salad out of other things. 2568, Jordan gunning down people from left doesn't hurt defensively at all.
Jordan, see him on skates.
And his range is pretty bad out there. 4963, Jake had that big hot streak for like a month, made him seem like he's better offensively this year. No doubt. We kind of get conditioned into what a player does early in the year, and then we just kind of think he's that guy again. 2568, Chaz needs to be fat again. Dang you, fat shaming Dusty. He doesn't look skinny to me.
No.
I wouldn't say Chaz looks skinny. I had somebody in my mentions the other day says that he thinks Chaz is hurt.
I don't.
But his
mentally, he is.
Yeah, it's probably his. Yeah, he's hurt from the shoulders up.
He's mentally hurt.
His sprint stuff, though, is still very high. Like, his speed is fine. His range has been really good. So I feel like if he was hurt, you would notice it in his speed and his range. And that stuff is still high.
Yeah.
I don't think he's hurt. I think he just kind of walks funny at times. Now, to what you said, could he be hurt from the neck up?
Yeah, he's bruised. Yeah. He's got a brain bruise.
He needs to find Fromber's guy. Can Fromber's therapist speak English, I wonder?
Did that not blow your mind a little bit, too, when they showed the 3 fastest times from home to first, and it was De La Cruz, somebody else, and Pena?
No, because I look at Savant weekly.
God, that's crazy.
So I knew that.
I just wouldn't put him in a De La Cruz type level, but boy, he's flying.
He is super fast. He's quite the athlete.
Yep.
713-780-3776.
Even though he runs like he's got a hitch in his giddy up. He's got a very awkward.
He does.
He has an awkward kind of stride, but boy, he gets it done.
I think it's called swag. You just don't know anything about that anymore.
What is it called? That gait? His gait looks a little
different. He does have an awkward gait.
Yep.
I like to call it drip. Are they a Red Sox player or are they a
character from the Boston heist movie, The Town?
Oh.
I like that movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Very good movie.
Next with the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Brian likes this song.
How can you not?
It's a good song. Makes me think of like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Funny you should mention that. We're talking about The Town.
Ben Affleck, he and Jen Lopez are going through it again.
They've been
for a while. They're breaking up.
I thought she was.
They've been that way for a while.
Yeah, they've been separated.
Apparently, seen in public.
apparently he doesn't want to, like, embarrass her. That's why, like, they haven't officially divorced. Huh. Yeah, it's weird. She's weird.
This one and House of Pain.
House of Pain.
What's the connection?
They are always normally associated with Boston.
Oh, okay.
Because House of Pain, the group, is, I believe, from Boston too. So it's Jump Around in this one that always gets played Boston theme.
I feel like you just want to mention Jump Around because they always play
No. Obviously, it's greatest fourth quarter at Camp Randall, but yeah.
All right, let's get to it. Is he a Red Sox or is he a cast member or character?
Character. Yeah, these are not the actor names because I'm not going to just say Ben Affleck. That's too easy. So these are the character names. Either a Red Sox player or a character name from the movie The Town. Number one, Adam Frawley.
Who's first?
Joel.
Charity first, right? Because I suck at this game.
Sure.
I will go.
I think it's Age of Beauty.
I will go cast member.
How do you spell it?
Frawley. Frawley.
I'm going to go with Red Sox.
Joel's on the board first. Dang. That is actually John Hamm's character from The Town. He's an FBI agent.
I forgot
in the movie.
John Hamm was
Same thing. I didn't remember him in the movie.
That's why I had to go the names of the characters because I couldn't say John Hamm.
When was this movie made?
2010.
I think I saw it in 2010.
Oh, you haven't seen it since?
Uh-huh.
You're not like, what's his name from the Celtics, watching it every week?
No, I'm anti-watching movies again.
What? The Celtics head coach. Yeah. He apparently watches it every week.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he quotes the movie all the time. All right, so Joel's up 1-0. Number two, Jeremy going first. James Coughlin.
Can you spell this one?
Coughlin is C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N. Coughlin.
Like Tom.
Yeah, exactly like Tom.
I'm going to go cast member of The Town.
I am as well.
That is Jeremy Renner's character. You both get one there. Yeah.
Oh, that really? That was the main character.
Yeah, that's the main character. Exactly right. Joel is 2-0. Really, Jeremy's 1-1. Number three, Stephen McRae. M-A-C-R-A-Y. McRae. But Stephen McRae.
I'm going to once again say cast member.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that is another character from the movie. That is played by the actor Chris Cooper. Number four, Joel up one. And Jeremy going first here. Zach Kelly.
Is it with K-E-L-L-E-Y or just Kelly?
K-E-L-L-Y.
I'm going to go cast member of The Town.
Joel. I am as well.
You're both incorrect. That is a Red Sox relief pitcher.
Dang.
Yeah, didn't say Joe Kelly, so.
No, yeah, Zach Kelly. Yeah, Zach Kelly. All right, number five, Joel going first here, still up one. Desmond Elden. E-L-D-E-N. Desmond Elden.
I will say, man, I'll say cast member.
Yeah, me too.
That is correct. That is the actor Owen Burke, his character from the movie.
So that's five?
Yeah. Joel's still up one. We've got number six, two left to go. Jeremy going first here. Bailey Horn.
I'm going to go with a cast member of The Town.
Joel?
I am as well.
You're both incorrect. That is a Red Sox relief pitcher.
How do the Red Sox have so many players I've never heard of? What is wrong with that team?
Yeah,
how are
they
decent?
Haven't spent a lot of money outside of Rafael Devers, I guess. All right, number seven. Joel's still up one going first here. Mickey Gaspar. G-A-S-P-E-R.
I'll pick the opposite of what Joel picks.
Yeah, I figured you would. I'm going to say cast member.
All right, it is a tie. Jeremy ties it up. Mickey Gaspar is a Red Sox backup catcher and infielder.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was listed on their depth chart of both catcher, first, and second.
He's a utility guy.
Yep, utility guy.
Man, I thought I was for sure going to lose.
Ends in a tie, unfortunately.
That's the worst.
I'll take it. It's a moral victory for me.
That's the worst performance I've ever had in this game.
Normally you usually run the table.
Go at least 6 out of 7.
I'm going to look to see how many of these guys are on the 26-man.
I don't know. I just Googled Red Sox dev chart, and that's what came up.
How many Red Sox did you have? You had Gasper?
Yeah, Gasper, Zach Kelly, and who was the other one? I'll have to pull my list back up here. The other one was Bailey Horn.
Oh, Bailey Horn's not on the active roster.
I didn't include guys that were on the injured list. I just went to dev chart and looked for guys who weren't on the injured list.
You got Bailey Horn not on the active roster. You can throw this. You can throw this result out. Throw this result
I'm
out.
I'm taking it. It's better than an L. I'm taking
this result.
Yeah,
Joel's
is not going to throw it out. He didn't lose.
Result.
Yeah, I didn't
thrown
lose.
Out.
I'll take it.
All right. Let's get to our car wreck of the day. 713-780-3776. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I think it's well done.
Yeah, I like it.
I think
it.
That's good, Brian.
You didn't like it the first time you did it, but it sounds good.
I cleaned it up a little bit. I think it was, it's a little cleaner this time.
Yeah, that sounds good. You say, there we go. What does you say, Kikuchi? Astros are 3-0 in his starts. What does he do against the Bo Sox?
5 2/3
5 and 2/3 feels like a lock. That's pretty much what he's been every single start.
He's going to find it a little bit. He hasn't been, I know. He's teetering around 5. 5 2/3, give him a little extra there, but unfortunately, 3.
Probably the best lineup he's faced. He's went Tampa, Texas, Tampa.
Yeah, I think it's the best lineup he's faced.
Yeah, that's the best lineup he's faced. And the Red Sox have seen him a lot. Now, they haven't seen the new and improved Yusei Kikuchi. I'll take that.
I don't know if I could take it with 3 earned runs.
I'll take it.
Not with the way the offense is, especially with some of the lineups.
What's the offense put up tonight?
Yeah, I don't. I would take the unknown over 3 earned runs.
Tanner Hawktua, pitching for the Red Sox. He's had a good year.
Been pretty good.
He's had a good year. He faced the Astros 2 starts ago. 1 run in 6 innings. So hopefully the Astros can get to him a little bit better this time at Houston with the new batter's eye.
New batter's eye. I think the same thing.
In center field, too. Soccer Matters coming up after us, which you can listen to Glenn Davis. He'll be talking about the Premier League, La Liga opening weekend for both leagues. A stretch run for the MLS for all clubs, including your Houston Dynamo. He'll have ticket giveaways on Soccer Matters, too. We should pick a Premier League team this year. Keep track. Keep tabs at the table and what tactics the squads are using and who our gaffers are.
Yeah, I might have to let you guys handle that.
I was going
to
say, I don't think I'd fare any better than I would at Red Sox player or, but
I would just literally spin a globe and point. I have no idea.
I want to pick a Premier League club this year. Y'all text in and tell me which Premier League club I should cheer for. I want to go all in. I want to be in on the tactics, the transfer window. I want to be all in on the. I love soccer. I just have never been able to get into the Premier League, but I need to. So y'all tell me who I need to follow. Who does my club
Lance
need to
has
be?
One, right?
I don't know. I want to be like Lance.
No, I'm saying Lance has
Lance
one. I know
Everton.
Dell watches a lot of soccer.
I think he's Everton.
I want a squad.
I think that's right. He's Everton.
Isn't there, you're Branham. There's a team called West Ham, right?
Have they been relegated, though?
I have no idea.
I don't want a squad that gets relegated every other year. Like, I want
to bandwagon it?
I don't want to be a top-of-the-table team, though. Like, give me a top 10 of the table. There's 20 clubs. Give me a top 10 of the table, somewhere between 6 and 10, that has a chance to win it all every 3 to 4 years.
You could follow, is J.J. Watt's team one? What league is J.J. Watt's team in?
They're Burnley,
just got
right?
Up,
Burnley,
yeah.
Did they get promoted to the Premier League?
I think so.
Glenn's going to hate this conversation.
That's all right.
I mean,
Craig Ackerman's
more
a
about
Man
a six.
City team, I believe.
See, that's too big.
Yeah, it's like rooting for the Cowboys.
No, Burnley, that's Man United.
Okay. Burnley's not in the Premier League this year. So I don't, if they were promoted, maybe they went from League 2 to League 1, the championship.
What about the other actors that own that team?
Oh, it's actually already started. There's already been,
you're talking about Wrexham.
Yeah, Wrexham.
Yeah, that's Ryan Reynolds.
They're still a ways off.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I'll go listener participation. Whichever club y'all want me to follow, and the most of you, I'll follow that club. All right, let's get to our car wreck of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Apparently, apparently Brentford's nickname is the Bees.
Huh.
Seems like an obvious connection.
Yeah.
Seems like I could be a Brentford fan.
There you go.
And they finished 16th on the table last year, though. That's borderline relegation.
Maybe they have some
bandwagon Branham.
That's too bad. I need a better club than that, I think. What about Aston Villa? All right, what are you nominating for car wreck of the day?
I will nominate Gosder Cherilis, former first-round pick of the Detroit Lions, now 40, got on a plane going from Boston overseas and ended up urinating on an elderly lady, hitting someone else before passing out, and appearing drunk when he got on the plane.
I was just supposed to say name the drug or guess the drug, but it's alcohol.
It is alcohol, it seems. Yes, not a good look. And the judge said, quote, it's pretty egregious what you did as alleged.
Maybe you couldn't hold
obvious
it.
Obvious statement.
Okay.
Maybe you couldn't hold it. Maybe he's got bladder issues.
Okay.
Possible.
So you peed on an older person.
I mean, it could be accidental. We don't know the intent. We don't.
Right, but
if you're peeing on yourself, the chances of it getting over onto another seat on the airplane are pretty tough. You're probably just loading your pants and underwear.
Well, I mean, it said it peed on her, right?
It said urinated on an elderly person.
Yeah, do we know, like, if he, we don't know if I mean, he, like, intentionally
exactly.
like, aimed at her or if she caught some splash?
Exactly. Or did she just rub up against his
says,
pants?
He appeared drunk when he boarded the plane, allegedly argued with the flight crew about his seat. An hour into the flight, urinated on an elderly passenger, then hit another passenger, and then took that passenger's seat and passed out.
Yeah, it's not enough information. If I'm the attorney of this guy, he soiled his pants, he has bladder issues, a little bit brushed up against this old lady. We're terribly sorry it happened, but he did not commit a crime.
He hit someone and put their seat.
Allegedly, it said, right?
Right.
Yeah, and what does hit mean? Does it mean he kind of ran into because he's a big football player? Or did he hit close fist it? Like, we don't know.
I'm betting on the legal system winning this one.
I'm betting on a settlement.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm betting on a settlement.
Settlement sounds like the leading favorite here. If this guy needs some representation, I would be happy to represent him in his case. I'm not legally licensed to do
and
that.
I'm
I've never
really
taken
going
the bar.
With the legal system.
Yeah, good point. Although I think I just attorneyed that one pretty good. Panels and NRGs, my car wreck of the day. Hurricane Beryl still doing its thing. And I'm not blaming the Texans for this. Like, I'm sure they're working as fast as they can. This isn't a shot at them. But it really hurts my viewership experience. And really, that's all that matters. I'm glad that no one was hurt by the panels that fell off of NRG. I'm glad that no one was too hot in NRG Stadium the other day. But all that matters is my viewing pleasure. And my viewing pleasure was not at its optimal pleasure because of these panels at NRG being out. They need to hurry up and fix this so I can be entertained.
I agree.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's why it's car wreck of the day.
All right, I'm going to nominate myself for multiple times accidentally putting in the top of the hour rejoin where I thought I'd put in the bump to break. So I don't know if that's been mentioned in the text line. I thought it might, but either way, I'm going to nominate myself. That was a rookie mistake that I made twice in about 10 minutes.
What happened there?
I dragged the wrong file in. What I haven't discovered yet is if the file got corrupted or changed or if I literally just grabbed the wrong one, but that's what happened.
Yeah, that was
it was a rookie move.
If it's the worst thing that happens to you today, it's not the worst thing.
Oh, it's not the worst thing that's happened today, but it still deserves a car wreck of the day nominee.
2568, maybe she said to him that he needs to shower, and he thought she said,
oh, God.
We don't know that to not be true. It's going to be hard to prove, I think.
Unless someone got on a cell phone. Abuse.
Yeah, do we have video evidence of this?
No, I haven't seen if anybody has phone evidence. It wasn't on the story.
I mean, if there was video evidence, it would already be out there, I think.
Probably right.
Yeah, they probably don't have it.
Like, airplane lady was out immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless arguments and punches. Like, they're usually out pretty quick.
Normally coming off the plane, too, they're going to be questioning people if anybody videoed it.
Yeah, I think it would be out.
Yeah.
I think TMZ would have it. 0754 Joe George for car wreck of the day.
Not a bad call.
Yeah, that might be something we talk about all week.
Not sure that we're going to repeat it now, but...
Well, I'll repeat it. What did he say? He said the...
Washington is where quarterbacks go to die.
No, yeah. Not quarterback, but in specifically speaking of a quarterback that...
He wanted to trade Fromber.
That's true, too.
He wanted to trade Fromber.
That quote won't end up on who said it.
Did you see the left fielder for the Yankees last night, too? Jason Dominguez? Go ahead, run on second base. Base hit to him, and he looked at second and to see if he could get the runner at second, and then hesitated. The guy scored.
Couldn't happen to a better franchise.
Exactly.
All right, thanks to Brian for doing all
panels
the what wins.
Panels.
Oh, I go panels. Yes, because I lured the other guy out of it. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. I'm Glenn Davis. Soccer Matters right now.
ESPN 97.5.